Blog Talk Radio.
You are tuned in to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang. Stay tuned as we enter the world of the unknown. There is a silent, invisible world that surrounds us all. A world we don't understand. A world that we wish to understand. And on Paranormal Horizons, we're going to explore this and hopefully get some answers. Good evening, everyone, and we are back for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason Ophir, here with the beautiful and talented Sherry Pang. Sherry, how was your week?
Pretty good, Jason. How about you? How's your week?
Oh, you know, every time we always talk about our weeks, and there's just really nothing to report. I'm still alive. I work, but nothing good nor bad, but I suppose kind of living a neutral existence is acceptable.
Well, you know what, as you were just saying when we were talking before we were out live on air, that no news is good news. Isn't that right, huh?
Yeah, because as we know, as we both well know, life can go sideways in an instant.
That's right, and if it does, it's only temporary.
Hey, I don't know if
crazy,
you saw this.
But... So, you
I
have anything to report?
Yes, I saw
new?
This. Yeah, I've seen this this story, and I don't know if it's super accurate or if it's really legit or not, but it seemed to be. It was regarding that scientists have finally disproven that ghosts exist. They have scientifically proven ghosts aren't real. And it has something to do, and I don't have all the details in front of me, but it has something to do with some tests that were done at the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider thing over in Europe, where they're, I don't even know what they're doing, smashing atoms or something. But I guess according to some scientists, I wish I had the details in front of me so I could give you more information, ghosts do not exist. What do you think of that?
And this is a scientific report?
It wasn't a report. It was just some scientists out there at the LHC claiming that they've proven that ghosts can't exist. I guess that really popular guy, Tyson deGrasse or whatever his name is, the physicist, has also made some comments about it. I find it very difficult that they can actually say something doesn't exist. I don't really buy it. I mean, I'm totally into science. I work in a science-related industry. And, you know, I don't think science can explain everything. I don't know what they're looking at or what the sort of data that they have or the experiments they've conducted. But I'm still going to be on the fence on ghosts. But it wasn't enough to draw me to be for sure that ghosts don't exist.
Right. You know, I think that everybody has their own belief system. And, you know, a lot of it is how they're raised and, you know, the different influences from not just only family, but from school to, you know, all other types of influences. You know, it could be your interaction with the, let's just an example, your doctor or your friends or, you know, your family, your outer family circle, cousins, or anything else that can influence. But also, too, maybe your own personal influence, because sometimes we can bring things on. I mean, as you know, and sometimes, you know, I know for sure that, you know, what we think, we manifest. And you know, we can sometimes manifest good things, and we can also manifest bad things. And you know, it's... whether you realize it's ghosts that exist or not, I think it's a personal choice. So, you know, I just, as you know, as a psychic medium, I've always had the gift ever since I was a little child, and I know, I don't have to believe, I just know they exist. So I've had too many readings that come through that, you know, there's no way that I could know that there is, you know, the facts or whatever the information, but when I channel that information, I know they exist. So anyway, just we want to get back on to our special guests. It's been a long time. I can't remember how long it's been since we've had Eric Mitchell back, you know, back on. So, yes, just a very enlightening soul, a personal friend of mine. I love him to pieces. You know, I'm sorry for Eric publicly for the confusion on the dates of his special, you know, appearance on the show. So a public apology for my confusion of dates and everything. But I'm always welcome to have him back. I mean, it's amazing to have him, and we're going to talk about anything from consciousness to whatever we're going to go. So, Jason, can you bring him on?
Absolutely. Hey, Eric.
Hey,
welcome
Jason.
Back to the show.
Hey, Sherry, how are you? Doing well, I'm tired, but I'm all right. You know, that lack of sleep stuff really gets you. So tonight, let's just use small words.
Okay, that sounds good.
Eric, how are you doing?
Okay. I've been fighting that PTSD in my sleep a lot lately, so I do apologize if I'm sluggish or just not as quick as I normally am.
Oh, no, there's nothing to be apologizing for. We all have our moods and cycles, and, you know, I've been having some, I don't know what it is. I'm not going to blame anything or anything, but you know what the thing is with me, and I can say this, is that I've been having some sleep issues too, but, you know, when I do sleep, I sleep, but it's just been, you know, the sleep pattern is not, like they say, what, 7 to 8 hours? I've been sleeping maybe about six. It's crazy, but I've been going on 6 hours for a long time, and sometimes I have to catch up and get an 8-hour sleep, but I think everybody's different.
Oh, definitely. It's incredibly important. Mine is, last time I had it checked, I was burning about 1,500 calories in my sleep. So much like someone that comes home from war or something like that, you know, you literally, you're in a sleep state, but you're struggling, you're fighting, you're yelling, you're just, you know, thrashing and stuff. So, you know, day after day, it just kind of slowly keeps on and keeps on until you go, okay, I'm white flagging it. So,
how about you?
Any day now,
another problem with sleeping?
It goes in cycles. There's sometimes I can't sleep for the life of me, and then other times I'll sleep for 12 hours. I've always been curious about putting a camera or an audio recorder when I sleep, but I'm almost afraid to, because I'm afraid what I'm going to see or hear what's going on, you know, while I'm actually asleep.
Oh, seriously? Wow. Huh.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be an interesting experiment, and I should try it one of these days and report it on the show.
Oh, that would be neat. Be really neat. You know,
yeah.
That Neil deGrasse Tyson, though, I've got to point him out. He really, really gets me. For a man with such stature, such, you know, prestige degree lists and everything he's done, the papers he's written – absolutely jaw-dropping, you know, but at the same time, that huge wall of skepticism, you know, here's a man that's got the mind, and he puts a wall in his way to where he can't move any forward, you know, and pulling back the reins on a paradigm that really needs to move forward. I mean, there's this particular type of iron that we only find in rare places, but it takes billions of years for one star to form, another, you know, 4 or 5 billion years, excuse me, for another star to form. And then billions and billions of years later, somehow these two stars, they have to collide at a certain speed or above this certain speed in order to meld these two planets into a particular type of iron. And somehow, some way, the only other place this iron exists at all is in the hemoglobin in your blood that circulates every time your heart beats. So I would not say only that, you know, us as ghosts, we're literally ghosts driving a meat suit made out of stardust. You know, if you look at the science close enough, which is even more fascinating than us just being souls trapped in a body and living out a lifetime and going somewhere else afterwards.
Well, what's your, do you know anything about the LHC? I don't know anything about it. I know that there are people afraid that they're going to, like, open a black hole and going to make the universe implode. So I don't know what's going on over there. Do you know?
I do. Well, I look into quantum physics quite a bit. And it does change quite often. You don't see it on CNN or anything like that, so you really have to dig. But these guys, yeah, they are dealing with a very, very dangerous type of physics. They actually got shut down for a while because the people that were funding it said, you know, this is really dangerous. We don't know what we're going to do here. So they shut funding down. These new funding people came in and said, we'll fund you, but you've got to up the power a heck of a lot more. So there are people that are worried. I mean, you've got a big question mark there with people that act professional. But, you know, how would you like that if you went to a local McDonald's and everybody there, it was their first day? I mean, are you going to feel really confident about, you know, eating that that meal you're about to have? Much less it's McDonald's, for God's sakes. You know there's something wrong with it anyway. You know, just because you can, you know, put on a badge and a pair of glasses and say, hi, my name's Bob. This is my first day. How can I help you? Please don't destroy the planet, you know, in the process, you know. But no, it's really dangerous work. I don't think that kind of work should be within an atmosphere at all. You know, take it somewhere else. But on the same course or discourse, there's a lot of conspiracy theorists that sit around. And when I say conspiracy theorists, I mean these people that will take anything and just believe it. And then you have to add fear and paranoia and all this and create this quintessential conspiracy theorist that, you know, requires people to poke fun. You know, people that aren't thinking full rational force. But, you know, what if this, what if that? You know, what if the sky is falling? But it seems these days a lot of people are cohering to fear, television. You have a lot of, you turn on the TV, you're going to hear, you know, fear this, war that, the world's going to end, Nibiru is going to get us any day now. Of course, Nibiru is supposed to crash into us like every year, I think, sometimes twice, you know, if it's not done right the first time, I guess. But it's, you know, people are just wired to think that way because of what they consume consciously, you know, on a daily basis. And I think it's really sad because we have these things in our brain called endorphins, and we fill these endorphins with hopefully happiness. But we have what if, we have fear, we have drugs, we have alcohol, we have cigarettes, we have that terrible McDonald's stuff I was talking about, you know, and we fill those endorphins all the time. And if we're not conscious about what we fill our endorphins with, you know, CNN can do it, Fox News, everybody needs to hate Trump, just whatever addiction, because it is a line, you know, along the lines of addiction. You know, cigarettes fill endorphins, and so does being addicted to fear. You know, and once you have that type of addiction on your mind, it stays that way until you properly correct it. You know, a lot of doctors say, well, you can only be done by medicine, but before medicine, there were actually conscious practices saying, I'm not going to smoke, and I'm not going to watch how terrible my president is by a biased media. But it really is. It's just as strong as any addiction out there.
Everybody does. The world does seem definitely to be fear-based. It's hard not to get sucked into it when you're bombarded by the media, you know, and you know, a terror level alert that's never off at orange or whatever it is, you know. It's like the governments want us to be afraid.
Well, we have this, I think they call it the lizard mind, where it's supposed to be, of course, I don't believe we come from apes and slowly developed. I couldn't possibly swallow that at all, not even with a glass of water. But we are constantly bombarded that way because we have a primitive part of our brain. And it's there for a reason. It's a survival skill, fight or flight, medulla oblongata. And here I said I was going to start using small words so I can understand myself, for Christ's sake. But this thing goes, you know, this little monkey mind or lizard mind back there coheres to sexuality, fear, hatred, jealousy, all these negative and primitive responses. And here we are, you know, acting like apes, but somehow putting on a professional shirt and a show for life to deal with this. But these are the practices that we're doing behind closed doors and sitting here and just filling our minds and filling these endorphins with negative energies, negative peptides, sodium peptides, you know, that come from our brain to literally discourse our mind, wire it, if you will. You know, it's like soldering. You know, you take one wire and you connect it to fear and then hatred and then sexuality and all these things. And I believe, you know, call me a conspiracy theorist or not, but the people that are pulling the real strings in this world, in this country, fully understand how to do that. Keep people out of their conscious mind, put it back in the monkey brain and watch them jump around and bang their chest. And, that, and a lot of times that's what people are doing. I mean, I turn on the news every once in a while and my jaw just gets further and further toward the floor. Like, this is possible. You know, you have this huge feminine hate men type thing going on. You've got this liberalism that's out of control. I don't even know the definitions anymore because I don't think I have enough pens in my apartment to really put the equation together and make it morally correct. But it's just out of control. And these paradigms are being pushed for a control system. You know, I believe the military started it off using Adolf Hitler's tactics when Project Paperclip brought over 1,000 or more of their scientists when it came to public mind control used for corporations, not really a government per se, but used by corporations. I mean, Coca-Cola wants you to buy their product. They're going to plug you every chance they get, you know, over and over again. And it kind of expands into this whole consumerism that we're pushed into. And it's, I don't know, I often sit down on a park bench or something like that, and I watch what you call average people that live average lives, and they are completely consumed by it. Give me some honey boo-boo, give me some football, give me some reality TV, and they just can't get enough of it because real life sucks for them. And, you know, I think if your life consists of getting a funnel cake in 1 week and that's the happiness you can talk about it, well, at least you have that without being pushed into making a decision of belief or thought system, you know, keeping the mind, you know, clear from all these things. Easily pull.
I know. You're breaking up there for a second. Oh, no,
oh, sorry
you're
about that.
Up. You sound good now. I'm one of the people that's glued to my phone, you know, and I can't put it down. Facebook or whatever has gotten inside, rewired my brain. I couldn't imagine being somewhere without the internet, you know, because I've become so dependent on it. And I've always kind of thought that it's some sort of conspiracy, and I totally understand what you're saying with the Nazis and Operation Paperclip. And it's kind of a scary world we're living in. Everybody's just going around, you know, in a haze, and some digital haze in their brain. And you know, I wish there was a way to break. I'm sure there's a way to break the addiction, but I just like it too much, as probably most people do.
Yeah. Oh, it is. I think everybody pulls out their phone and they're just scrolling meme, you know. A lot of people are asking me, man, you're hardly ever on Facebook anymore. What's going on? And it's just, I don't know if it's just gotten dumber or, you know what, but I mean, I used to read interesting articles and really great news. And now it's just, it just doesn't have the same flavor anymore for me. So I just kind of backed away for a little bit, but yeah, everywhere I go, you know, people are, you know, they're gonna have to start moving trees out of the way and telephone poles so people don't get hurt because they're not even looking up anymore. And you know, the sad thing is, it's not just kids. I mean, kids these days are incredibly addicted to this stuff, but you know, us adults are just on it all the time. You know, where can you find a free thinker when he's always on the screen?
I'm really bad. I have the Oculus Rift, you know, the virtual reality and a gaming PC. So that's what I do on downtime. I'm in it too deep. I can't go back now. I'm in it too deep.
Well, if you ever look at anything, guys, to like invest in the future. I mean, I don't know what you guys invest in or anything like that, but the next like energy boom, and I've been looking at this, and this is good for listeners, anybody that wants to get in on it, is that lithium batteries are about to take like a huge, huge change. And whereas you plug your phone in for an hour, you won't have to do it for the next month. Cars are going to be charged. Full lithium battery cars will be fully charged for, 500 miles from a minute to 9 minutes worth of charge time. So, this most likely, it doesn't sound like a big thing, but there's already countries ordering no more sale of gasoline at, year 2025, 2028 and stuff like that, because they know it's about to happen. And energy companies are literally dropping billions of dollars into these markets because they've already seen the product. They know it's going to work. And so instead of jumping from here to free energy or zero point energy, that's going to be our next step after oil, gas, fuel, coal, and all that. So that's going to be a huge change in the near future when it comes to energy, all over the world, really, but mainly here in America.
What do you think about technology, Sherry?
It's going to be advancing pretty high rate. I can't keep up with it, to be honest with you. So, I mean, I'm kind of old school, and I've learned things kind of a little bit slow. But, it's really, the last 20, 30 years, it's just amazing how things are so much easier, but also on the other hand, it can be very much complicated and disconnected. So, yeah, it has its pros and cons, but it's just a matter of balance. And I like the way Eric thinks about how, he was talking about McDonald's a couple times earlier, and it's interesting, my thoughts when he was talking about McDonald's, how can they go and, the advertising of, feed your kids and, fairly cheap and everything, but when I think about what behind the scenes are and what McDonald's is all about, they're poisoning our people. They're poisoning our own kind. I don't know how they can. I'm not saying this to be mean, but I don't know how they can sleep at night knowing that. I don't know if this is true, but is it true that the quality of food is terrible? I it's not. I can't see how it could be organic. And it's got a lot of chemicals, and, we're talking about all kinds of things from, the things that you hear. And I was just reading on a blog, my cousin texted me tonight, and she said, I got a friend request from you. And it's like, oh, my gosh, the hacking and things like that, and don't do this and don't do that. And I don't mean to say this, but a lot of people are a bunch of sheep, Use your brain. Use your thing. Is it really true? Is it really necessary? Is it true? Just ignore it, just decline it. I mean, you have to think. You can't just follow the masses. You have to have some balance and have some common sense, but also, use your intuition and see if that's true or not. I don't know. That's just my 2 cents. So nothing personal or trying to, be offensive towards anybody.
Yeah, I think it's funny that, McDonald's, it says, its slogan is, "I'm loving it." And that's all the subconscious mind needs to see is love. Anyone with lack of love in their life, in their world, or anything, they feel isolated, alone. Well, in psychology, people fill that void sometimes with eating, particularly like here in America. We have the obesity rate that cannot be matched, And here these people are, I need some love. And all of a sudden there's fries hanging out of their teeth. Does it work? Well, apparently it does. It really does.
I'm not going to lie.
It's been
working
for since back in the 1950s, Eric.
Yeah.
I'm one of the sheep because McDonald's fries are the best. They are delicious.
They are the best. But I try not to get near it. And that's the funny thing. Health conscious people. It's terrible to see it too. And it really is. It's something I had to point out to myself in life is some people drink and smoke and sit around and eat and slurp up some bacon. Hey man, I love me some bacon. This stuff is good. My girlfriend's vegetarian. She sniffs my bacon for God's sakes. I mean, bacon's great stuff, but and they're genetically predisposed to last a long time, where other people are health conscious, they never smoke, they never drink, they never want to put anything bad in their body, which I totally respect. If you respect your body, you respect yourself. And, these people end up dying of a heart attack at 35, 40 years old, not because They didn't take care of themselves. They didn't run. They didn't jog. They didn't work out. It's because genetically they're predisposed, you know, from their parents and their grandparents and everything like that. And I find that a terrible shame to see that kind of thing happen. And it almost seems like the good ones go first, you know, good-hearted people. Maybe they're humbled by their health and experiences through that. But it just kind of seems that way.
It's amazing the genetics of everything. I mean, you can have somebody that drinks a 12-pack of beer and they die and smoke and they die in their 80, but then somebody drinks two beers twice a week and, you know, and dies of liver failure. It's fascinating.
It is. Random thoughts, you know, but it seems to be true. I've got a stepbrother. We have same mother, different fathers, health nut his whole life. Went to Harvard University Med, graduated, became a Navy SEAL. He joined the English police, which is a type of person you can't really text without getting in trouble. You know, like, where's your damn comma? Stuff like that. It's like, just read what I said. You forget about the punctuation. Most of us, especially guys, you know, we're like that. But, you know, he ended up with always worked out, always health food, always had a shake in his hand with multiple proteins and all these good things for you. And I'm over there with a, you know, cigarette hanging out of my mouth. Worst mistake I ever made was smoking. And, you know, and now he's given me a list of things. You know, now I'm overweight. I have I can't do enough sit-ups to get my abs in. He's like, my thyroid's going out. I'm like, oh, my God, you know, what'd you do to yourself? And he's like, I've been a health nut my whole life. And it's like, it's all down to, I guess, what they call random nucleotide polymorphisms that are in, you know, embedded in your DNA that kind of just kick off, you know, what your parents did and their parents did and what they were exposed to and all that. And it's just it's an unfair, you know, race as soon as you start life. So totally unfair.
So amid all this, you know, unhealthy food and technology taking over people's brains, how do we navigate through that? How can we start to navigate through that to raise our consciousness, to become more aware, to kind of take our, you know, our mind and spirit to the next level? Is there a technique that somebody could do if somebody's listening?
Oh, that's a hell of a question, Jason. I mean, the funny thing about us, human beings, as an animal, stripped down from everything that we suck up to as the ego, just the human being, the creature itself, really refuses to change anything until they admit peril. Until they are just up against something so big in their life, that's when they change. That's when people change. I think consciously, with consciousness itself, you've got to explore that a little bit. You know, some people just sit on a park bench one day and say, "Wow, what is the purpose of all this?" You know, and they have a bit of an epiphany, and maybe they'll read a few books, you know, and have someone else tell them what, you know, consciousness is. I'm sorry for the laughter, but I think that's hilarious. You know, it's just like reading a book to tell you how to meditate. You know, nobody can tell you how to be who you are or anything like that, or go inside yourself with someone else's book. But it's really a thing of what people think consciousness is. I mean, there's people that say, well, you know, I hate math. I had trouble with algebra in school, and I've always hated math after that. Well, that's something that we worship as a limitation. You know, a lot of people say, well, I worship God every day of the week. And it's like, well, actually, no, you don't. You worship God on Sunday, and the following 6 days, you literally worship your limitations. People say, well, I don't like botany. I just don't get plants. You know, there's always one thing in every single subject that can spark your imagination, that can spark the quintessential you of looking into a particular subject that makes you feel like you're good at it instead of bad at it. You've got to realize how your brain works and reverse that. And the reason why I say that is an incredible thirst for knowledge could really increase your awareness around you. And if that happens in subjects that you would normally avoid, then you do spark quite a bit of consciousness, of more awareness. You see things that you recognize in your everyday life that normally you would just walk by in a subway and go, I don't know what that is. You know, never looked into it, don't care to look into it. I'm going to pop on my iPod and listen to this new song. But that's just kind of what we do. But if you think of consciousness itself, you know, and that's the big thing with scientists these days, they're like, God, what is, you know, consciousness itself, what is it? You know, that's like saying consciousness, studying consciousness is like burning fire with a flame or touching the tip of your finger with the same finger. So it gets really, really, really difficult. I mean, you can pick it. Now, Jason, you can pick an object in your room right now, like a pen sitting on your desk or whatever. And you can stare at this object, and you can say this object is a so-and-so to yourself inside your own head, this thing that, I guess, talks to us, our own voice and everything like that. Now you can pay attention to that object, and you can also pay attention to your eyes viewing that object. And so when you're doing that, you're observing a little bit more of your conscious awareness. Now, somewhere deep inside this skull is this conscious awareness, being conscious of your eyes, conscious of the light, and conscious of the object that you're looking at. So now we have three things that we're looking at. And the thing about consciousness itself is it's non-local. That's the most hardest thing to believe in the world. But you could literally focus on that object right now, focus on your eyes, and take that consciousness that you perceive inside your head in this dark place. And isn't it funny that you perceive it to be dark in there, but everything of light exists in this consciousness? And then consciously move it a little bit above your head, outside of that dark space, and still pay attention to that thing you're looking at on your desk. So you can get up and you can walk around, and this thing called consciousness can be 6 inches above your head if you are consciously aware about it. And a little bit past that, it takes a lot more technique and things of that nature to just kind of play around with it, because people are so busy not being conscious. It's absolutely ridiculous. It really is. You know, what's the old saying? A foot is aware that it's a foot when it first touches the ground. So you know, if you're not a foot is aware that it's a foot when it touches the ground to walk. So that essentially tells you if you don't play with it, you're just not aware of it. And that's what it is. It's awareness itself.
Does that make
any sense?
I mean, yeah, we don't pay attention to anything anymore. I mean, you're like, I never even think about my feet unless I stub a toe, sort of thing. You know?
Exactly. So, yeah. And then that literally is a part of it. It really is. I mean, I think Alan Watts, I don't normally quote people, but he's a genius of a man. I think he said the thing that you are experiencing called everyday or ordinary consciousness, pretending you're not it, is the same thing as it. There's no difference at all. Which once someone gets that, it's incredibly just hilarious. You know, you have a bit of an epiphany and really laugh about it.
Do you think that people, through the power of their mind or consciousness, can manifest things into their life, whether it be something, a relationship or something physical? You know what I mean? Getting so connected to the universe that they're manifesting what they want.
It's
kind of thing.
Absolute. It's absolute, but it can't come from a, how do I explain that? Psychic ability. Sherry could definitely tell you. She's one of the greatest psychics I've ever met. And I've met tons of them out there, that once you pay attention to meditation goes away. Once you pay attention to your psychic abilities and intuition and put pressure on it, it goes away. You can't force it to happen. It just happens. So we're confused with the power of prayer and things of that nature. Well, it came from the same science. In quantum physics, the only thing that, you know, matter would not exist without an observer. It just simply wouldn't happen. It couldn't possibly happen because no one would be aware of it. The sun wouldn't be light if you didn't have eyes. Wood wouldn't be hard if it weren't, you know, in relation to your soft skin. So you being this organism really calls into being of the whole universe of light, heaviness, hardness, color, even love. It wouldn't exist. So, I mean, that's how special you are in the game of existence itself. Now, we look at subatomic particles, the tiniest particles in the world, and they're solid. And the moment you turn your back, they turn into a waveform like they're playing a game. And yes, sir, they are conscious. They are playing this game with you. So in order to manifest with thought, you definitely have to use your heart. Your heart has to be involved. Have you ever seen a group of people with fronts and no backs, or a coin with heads and no tails? There's a yin and yang to everything in the universe. So when you really, truly believe in your head that this is going to happen, and you, being the other side of the coin, truly put the effort in at the same time, and there's nothing else that can involve itself to be in the way. Now, things in life get in the way all the time, but I'm saying you put your full effort and your full intention into this, you're going to meet failure after failure. You're going to stumble. You're going to fall, because this is the opposite side really tripping you up. But if you stay true to your heart and your mind, yes, you do manifest. You do. But there is all the opposition in the way. There's always the opposition. I'll give you one example. I opened a restaurant. I ran several restaurants in this town that I live in now for people that have done it for many, many years. And I learned and learned and learned from them. And I finally decided I was going to go off on my own and do it. And, you know, Jason, I knew so much about the business. I knew so much about the marketing. I mean, years ahead of my time from these old timers. And everybody told me, hey, this food's not going to work. It's great, but it's not going to sell here. The location's bad. I mean, people were throwing stones at me left and right, even people that were supposed to support me. But I stayed with it, you know, 100%. I got that restaurant open with a $3,000 credit card. It didn't look all that great. You know, I had some decorations to buy and stuff like that, but it was open. Health department was thumbs up. Red tape was done and good to go, which was, I mean, how can you do that on $3,000? You know, I learned how to cut corners, get equipment cheap, you know, learn from the old timers. But, you know, I stayed in that restaurant for 8 months, barely got any business whatsoever. And it was almost overnight where it was just boom. I had to get employees right away. I had my kids working in there, you know, 16-hour days. I was pulling in $10,000 to $13,000 a month after I paid all my bills. I was making great money. But after that, everybody that threw stones at me were like, hey, can I get a free burger? Can I get a free – I said, no, you're paying double, you know. nobody, you know, had my side, not even my own wife at the time. I'm just like, man, nobody's got my back, you know, and I had to fight that, man, I'm such a failure. I screwed up. I spent a lot of money I shouldn't have. This is a big mistake. And these are the things that kind of creep into your character and try to destroy you. But with your own awareness and sometimes a sprinkle of stubbornness, you're going to achieve what you go after, but you have to know that I am going to, my name is Jason. I'm aware of myself. I'm going to accomplish this, but I'm also going to laugh my ass off and be totally aware when everything goes wrong, because I already know that's how it works. That's simply how it works. In any rate of growth in life, there's going to be pains, you know, there's going to be pains in the way. So we indoctrinate ourselves with the idea as we get older and we go through so many things in life, you know, I'm going to be in home by 5. Nothing can get me in this house except, you know, maybe stubbing my toe. I don't answer my phone. I won't have to deal with the bill collectors. And you just kind of, you know, indoctrinate yourself with that kind of way. You know, when we're little kids, you know, everything is great and wonderful. Nothing's bad. But as we get older, somehow we miss these lessons in school or miss these lessons in life to see the hidden hand, that dark hand in life. We want everything to work out perfect, but universe doesn't work that way. Reality doesn't work that way. So it's really great to achieve a certain level of consciousness to say, I'm going to achieve something. I'm going to bleed. It's going to hurt. I'm going to smash my fingers. It's going to suck. I'll get a flat tire on the way. But before I start this game, I'm going to anticipate all these things and welcome it, because that is life, and that's what I'm experiencing right now as a consciousness. I see people all the time. They watch movies thinking, wow, that guy won the lottery and it turned out to be great. I want to win the lottery too. Well, these are one of those things that, no, don't do that. don't take entertainment and think it's real and then go home and compare your life to that. That's what's wrong with a lot of minds. We watch a lot of fairy tales and stuff like that. Little girls are growing up watching, you know, fairy tales about Prince Eric and Happily Ever After and the Great Adventure, and he's got tons of money and everything's going to be great. These are falsehoods of reality that really enter a child's mind. And by the time they're 9 years old, in this generation, they have to choose whether they're, you know, gay, heterosexual, what their sexuality, at 9 years old, for God's sakes. And, you know, if it's straight, it's not popular. You're going to get picked on. You're going to get messed with, which is jaw-dropping for my generation. But, yeah, the entertainment value of reality, and I hate to put it that way because that's really what it is. People take this entertainment value subconsciously, turn it into reality. Young overweight women or older overweight women, they're staring at these magazines all the time going, why can't my body look like that? You know, so these things get in the way with reality. It gets in the way with intention, and it gets in the way of that self-confidence that you need to say, you know, my name's Jason, I'm going from here to there, and everything in my way is going to be my you know what I mean? I'm not going to say that word on the air, but you get my point. That's kind of the
I totally understand. You know, sometimes you get distracted though when you hear these stories about people that, like movie stars or singers, that suddenly get discovered just out of some random happenstance. And I see that sort of thing or hear those stories, and I'm like, how does that even happen? You know, why can't that happen to me? Because we're so distracted with everything, you know.
Well, that's another thing about
really
our animalistic. Yeah, it's another thing about our animalistic nature is that we concentrate on the problem 99% of the time, and the rest of the time we concentrate on the solution. If a problem happens in life, we're staring at the problem. It's amazing how people do that. But it is, you know, this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem. It's like, well, wake up, you know, what is the solution? And it's incredible. It's just incredible how once that mindset turns around and says, okay, next time I have a problem, I'm not going to concentrate on the problem. I'm going to concentrate on the solution to the problem, or at least 50-50, you know, give yourself half a chance. But that's what we tend to do. It's a tendency that we have. It's like, let's stare at the problem for a while. Let's let it build fear before we stand up and meet it halfway. So the problem seems bigger than what it is. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, Jason. You've come across a problem. It's like, oh, this is going to suck. It's going to suck. And all of a sudden you're like, hey, that wasn't that bad. But, you know, the fear itself of the solution, and that's what we have, fear of the solution or fear of change. It really is a scary devil in the imagination. But, you know, worry is a misuse of imagination anyway. But that's what you'll see is these go-getters, these people that really get things done. They seem to be blinded to it. They're like, no, I'm getting it, you know, and that's why I said you have to have your heart involved. Now, manifesting, you know, really just chilling out and saying, my God, I hope something great happens today. Well, I don't know. Hope's kind of a, you know, it's a beggar's word. You know, I hope this happens. You truly have to believe that this is going to happen, you know, and if you be that, the universe is going to come to you. I mean, that's all it is. The entire, all of existence, little strings vibrating at a tune, and you match that tune with your intent and it's coming right to you. But you do have to be ready for those shin splints and everything else on the way.
Absolutely.
And now we do have a caller. Are you open to take a question? I don't know if they're just listening or they might have a question. Are you open to that?
Well, Well, yeah, be easy on me. Like I said, I'm overtired and all that good stuff, but I'll try to squeeze my brain open a little bit.
All righty. Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. Who's this?
This is Bear. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Bear, how are you?
Not bad.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Jason. Hey, you're talking about manifestation, and, you know, you're in a subject that is dear and near to my heart. And as we talk about manifestation, I'd like to have your comments or your thoughts about what do you think about the universal oneness of all becoming one, your body becoming one. When one becomes two, your heart, your mind becomes from one coming to two. And then the ability to be able to manifest everything that you are able to do. People make their own reality, and you can manifest negativity, you can manifest positivity. And I just want your thoughts on that as far as the collective consciousness going into the God mind, and your thoughts on that and where you go.
Yeah.
And I'll just sit back and look, brother. Great show.
I love you, brother.
All right.
Hey, man. I didn't want to go there because I didn't want to scare Jason. You can go back in time to all sorts of literature that go back thousands and thousands of years. And, of course, a lot of us can squeeze our eyebrows and go, well, what is this Vedic text? You know, I tried to look it up on YouTube. I tried to look it up on the internet and things of that nature. And I find myself in a wonderful place that tells the truth still to this day, and it's called a library. Kids should hear about it. But, when you look into the Vedic texts that go thousands of years back, and you look at all 4,200 religions, a lot of things, well, the only thing they all have in common is love and oneness. And, people go, what is this oneness? Do I have to shave my head, sit on top of a mountain, not eat and speak for a year, and just kind of hum into the clouds and hopefully something special happens to me? Nowadays, it's a little more different. You know, we have things called the M theory. We have the string theory. And they're theories only because science is so scrupulous upon itself that it absolutely has to have the golden nugget in their hand and three more in their back pocket, to prove to everybody else. Science kind of buries itself in certain ways, but we can get to that another time. But every single thing is interconnected, everything. You know, Albert Einstein, he looked at this and, you know, he took two particles, he put them in a jar and had, well, basically a vacuum. And after time, he noticed they quit bouncing around and going nuts because they were mathematically impossible to figure out what they were doing. And we figured out that these things were rotating clockwise, side by side, and they were moving at the same rate of speed and everything. It was incredible. It was like, what is going on here? You know, it scared the man. He actually called it spooky action at a distance. So he separated the particles, viewed them both. They were still somehow connected without being aware of each other. Or somehow, yes, they were being aware of each other. Now we know you can put one on the moon, you can put one on Jupiter, and one here on Earth, and they're still going to be interconnected somehow, doing the same exact things, moving left at the same time, moving right at the same time. It's like, you know, you ever put a magnet under a table and make another magnet move? Wow, it just looks like magic. It's crazy. Wow. But that is the interconnectivity of the entire universe. It's everywhere, all at once, at the same time. There was a guy, probably one of the most technological guys on planet Earth at the time. His name was Ben Rich. He walked up on stage at a UFO conference, and he said, we now have the ability to take ET home. Well, Jan Harzan, you know, the head of MUFON, he's going, my God, I've wanted to know this my whole life. How is it done? So he chases him down. He said, whoa, how does it work? And he said, well, do you know how ESP worked? And Jan Harzan thought for a minute, and he's thinking of quantum physics. He's thinking everything. And he finally goes, everything in time and space is connected. He goes, that's exactly how it works. So, you know, in quantum physics, you know, the deep black government, the things that we're not supposed to know about and all that is definitely this type of science. You can go from point A to point B using that same technology. if I want a particle to go through one particle and pop out the other side, all you need is quantum entanglement to shorten that distance. So the best thing that you could ever find is in a meditative state of pure love, 100% unconditional love. And I know it sounds kind of corny, you know, I can stand on stage and talk about love and you can literally see mother smirk at me nowadays. That's how much love has changed from its pureness. It's becoming a ridicule subject. It really is. And that really scares me. But unconditional love is the closest thing you can feel to that. And if you can get into that in a meditative state, you will literally feel every particle of the universe all at once. And it hits you, and that will be the day you change forever. I can promise you that. And I think that's what Bear was getting at, because he definitely had similar experiences as well. And Sherry, you as well.
That is correct.
If I had,
yes.
If I hadn't, if I haven't put you up yet.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I said if I haven't put you to sleep yet.
No, you're fine. I'm listening. It's really enlightening to have you talk. And you're so enlightened in your journey, and you continue to be observant. And it sounds like I didn't know you way back, but it sounds like you have just gone from leaps and bounds as far as your development, as far as an individual, spiritually, emotionally, mentally. I mean, you've been on a big ride, and you're continuing to grow, and it's just amazing to see you do that.
I think that's the same reason I can tell Jason these things, because I am an impossibility. From where I was 5 years ago today till today, it's impossible. It's scientifically impossible. It's sociologically impossible. Mentally impossible, supposedly. Still fighting off the, what do they call it? Oh, God. Bear just had my last psychological exam. But he wants one of those for his own records. But it was trouble adjusting to trauma, because they didn't want to put full-blown PTSD on there. And the other mark I got on there was addicted to nicotine, dependent on nicotine. So on a full psychological scale, that's not too embarrassing considering what I've been through. But I mean, even my own girlfriend these days, she appreciates intellect. She appreciates deep thinking. She loves a lot of things I talk to her about, and she cannot fathom the very simple, slow talking, just laid back redneck, everything simple type of lifestyle to what I am today. She can't even think of it. Even meeting my friends here back home, she was like, "You were like that?" I'm like, "Yes, I was." And of course, I got to have my friends back home going, "What happened to your accent?" It's like, "Well, how come you talk so fast? How come you add up math that fast? You go to college out there, you know?" And I said, "Well, no, I wish it was that simple, but things have really changed. People can't picture me back then. They really can't. People that know me now." But on the flip side, I get to observe the people that knew me back then and watch me, come back home with this big change of different type of thinking and stuff like that. So it's a real conundrum for me, because I've got half my friends that are going, "How could you have ever been that ill-equipped in your brain compared to what you are now?" And of course, I have my friends back home going, "What'd that dang UFO do to you? What did it do to your brain? Do you got a, alien in your brain or something?" Just joking around. But it's really seeing a duality, and it's a place to reflect on both ends. And I'm sure no matter what it is, I'll learn from it, even though there's a bit of frustration in there. I would say identity loss, but I kind of laugh at the word identity itself. I'll go ahead, Jason.
So what do you think causes identity loss, Eric, in just your terms? I mean, what do you think why people lose their identity?
Well, we put ourselves in these little boxes, and these little boxes have perceptions in them. And these perceptions are derived from growing up and learning what type of mother you had, what type of father you had, what type of schooling you went through. Did you have good money in your home? Did you have bad money in your home? Were there good morals, bad morals, virtues, no virtues? A lot of these things decide who we think we are when we're older. You know, even in school, you know, if you're a good looking kid and you got money, but you got buck teeth, you get pushed to the line where he's a geek and that's what he's going to be his whole life. So other people get to really determine that, because children don't really have the tools to really put their foot down and say, no, I am me. You know, so everybody's put in this little category. This divide and conquer thinking is not a new thing. It's been around for thousands of years. We might be new to it, but humanity really hasn't. So we cohere to this identity because it's safe. You know, a lot of women stay in like abusive relationships, or a lot of men stay in relationships where their girlfriends cheat or doesn't treat them right or something like that, because yeah, it may not be good for them to be in a crappy relationship, but at least they know where they're at and it feels safe. It's the same thing with your identity. I feel so safe with my supposed identity right now, or our consciousness, limited, or can we get out and explore how much of my identity could be, spread out? And I'm not talking about an easy thing. I mean, once you destroy your worldview and rebuild it with less limitations, it's going to hurt like hell. I talk to a lot of people that say, I'm so enlightened and I'm so happy, and I'm going, what the hell are you talking about? It takes a hell of a lot to reach enlightenment. And just like I was telling Jason, there's a lot of hurdles in the way, a lot of stubbed toes, a lot of tears. But once you reach that certain point, you kind of look up at the stars and you laugh yourself silly, because you achieve that oneness. And it doesn't make anyone special than anyone else or anything like that. It's just a realization that's really important, you know, to your soul and life. And, you know, it's just we do. From my point of view, on a jaw-dropping level, we limit our lives through fear disguised as practicality, if that makes any sense.
Totally. A lot of times we are run by fear. Mm-hmm.
I know I am. All I have is chronic anxiety. I know that well.
Yeah, that'll get you. Anxiety,
yeah, fear.
Is a huge
it
one.
Could be just simple as, am I going to be able to make it today, or make it safely, or pay the bills, or it just goes on and on and on. And it's hard because we're so conditioned to have a certain result, and I call that attachments.
Yeah. And as long as we say, this is me, this is who I am, that's all I'm going to amount to. And even if it sucks, it's still safe. And that's fear disguised as practicality. Because life is limitless. It has limited. Just this morning, I spoke with, I'm probably the only person that interrupts themselves like this. But this morning, I was talking to an abductee. He's extremely famous. I'm sorry, I don't want to name drop, but he does have MS. He struggles in a chair. He's losing his legs very quickly, the use of his hands. And he's just an incredible human being. Incredible. And you know, just like Bear, I inspire to be like him, because no matter what happens to him, he's fine. You know, you can get upset about this or that, especially things that you're attached to and people that you love and everything like that. But here's a guy where life literally should suck. I mean, his poor wife runs around, wipes his lips after every meal, helps him go to the bathroom. You know, he needs her constantly. And you know what? A man needs to feel like he can stand on his own two feet, take care of his woman. It's an instinctual thing. It's not a perversion of a man, but just a man in his heart needs to feel like he's providing this. You know how a man is wired. He's born that way, not through condition, but through nature itself. But for him to just lay there in that chair all the time, you know, partially kicked back with his feet kicked out, he can move his thumbs around where he can roll around the house, can't go anywhere, can't do anything. And here he is, just making the best of his time. I call this guy with, minute problems. I mean, it's something tiny to him. And he's just so much happiness. so much, you know, cheer and everything like that, while he's crapping on himself, by the way, guys, you know, there's a little humor for it, you know, but he's got this incredible outlook. And I talked to him today, and coincidentally, you know, he was saying that that interconnectability, he said that one moment in my life, he said, this is why I am the way I am, you know, and that's just somebody I look up to. You know, a lot of people look up to LeBron James or, you know, their favorite football player going, wow, he's awesome. You know, here's a guy that's almost 100% crippled, immobile of his whole body, catheter tube in, bedpan. And I look up to this guy because no matter what situation he's in, he's in a great attitude, because even though he's limited with his body, he's not limited with his heart and his mind. And, that kind of thing I just aspire to. And I kind of look at myself in the mirror and go, God, I'm a spoiled brat. You know, I can get out and work out today. I can get out and run today. I can do so many things this man can. But there's two things he can do better than me. And he can think more positively with his mind and feel bigger in his heart. And if I could ever get there, I mean, that's where I'm headed.
It's truly inspirational. I mean, you think about how upset people get when small things happen. You know, you get a traffic ticket or this and that. Don't sweat the small stuff, you know. And for somebody to stay that positive with that, with those sort of issues, is remarkable. I don't think I could do it. I would be probably like everybody else, where I'd just be depressed, poor me kind of thing. But I'm striving to get to that place, because I totally agree with what you're saying, and that is a goal of mine personally, is to become more with the oneness, you know. And that's, I've always wanted to, and it's something I've always worked towards. But like you said, it's not easy. There's road bumps everywhere.
Oh, there definitely is. Definitely is. Especially with anxiety, because that's a tough thing. That's something that you, per se, share an apartment with. You know, I've suffered from it. I've suffered from, you know, depression, all kinds of things, suicidal thoughts and tendencies, and all kinds of things along the way. But, you know, the thing is you've got a roommate up in your head saying, what if? Those two simple words, what if, you know, oh, I'm going to go do this. Well, what if this happens? Well, I'm going to do that. Well, what if that happens? And you get to a certain point where the what ifs just get so loud that you already believe it happened. You know, it just already, and that's manifestation. That really is. And I watch a lot of people with anxiety destroy everything in front of them and then point their finger around going, who did this? You know? And it's tough, because people suffer from it. It's not like they're doing it to themselves. But life's hard. Everybody's got a road that they came from, and bumps and scars along the way. And I'm surprised that we all don't suffer from it. But it's a good thing that we have the ability to overcome that kind of thing and find new light in our lives, you know, because when we don't have things to look forward to, there's a lot of stagnation that goes on in the brain. And it's very, very prone for depression when you don't have things set out in front of you going, and it doesn't even matter. Like, I just want to see that new movie coming out next week. That's going to be great. That's perfectly good enough to keep your eyes forward, you know? And, but it's really important to have things, set goals and look forward to them, because that really helps you pull out of what if this happens, what if that happens? Say, what the hell? It's all going to happen. And there's no way we can have that illusion of control saying that, I've beat God's game. I beat the universe's game. I figured it out. Just stay away from everything, and I'll be happy as hell, you know? But so we kind of paint ourselves into a corner, you know, and it's just no way around it other than going, you know, this shot's going to hurt at the doctor's office, but I have to go. I, for one, I can raise my hand right now, and I always pitch a little humor in there with it when I talk to my friends about this, but I've got to go in and have my virginity taken by a doctor that may be concerned about my prostate. Now, yeah, it's going to happen. I got to tell you a funny story, Jason. Please don't let me gross you out, Sherry. And she's like, oh, my God, I'll never have him on the show again. But
I work in a hospital. Don't worry about me. I'm just listening.
You know, I've got to go in, and I think, I'm around 34 years old, and it's when I became aware of the experiences that were going on around me. And my nerves were shot. I'm a laid back guy. You know, I never get really, you know, uptight or too much anxiety, but this is the point where my hands are shaking. I'm having trouble. So I make a doctor's appointment to go into the doctor and have everything checked out. Now, I do realize, being at 34 years old, I'm overdue for the old check, the prostate check. So my doctor had pretty big fingers, so I went ahead and hired another doctor, and it was a female. Now, I picked a female because they have smaller fingers, and this is going to be okay, and I had so much anxiety
right.
about this. You know, it's like, I don't know what it's going to feel like. Is it, you know, I don't know. You know, and we get scared about these little things, but, you know, they're not, like I said, they're not always as bad as we think. So I go in, and there's this huge Russian woman that looks like she could beat me in any fight, any day of the week. I work out. I would not arm wrestle this woman. And then I look down at her fingers, and it was the biggest fingers I've ever seen in my life. And it wasn't the psychological moment of her fingers got bigger. No, they were literally huge. So here I am getting more and more anxious, knowing she's going to pop that glove on and this is going to go down. And instead, she goes, I noticed you're a little having a little anxiety. I'm like, yeah, well, I'm a single father raising four kids and all that stuff. So instead of giving me the test, she's giving me Klonopin and Prozac for my anxiety. Here's one of the most laid-back guys in the world. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take those, no problem. You know, but I didn't get, you know, my prostate checked that day. But it brought up so much anxiety. And, of course, my thoughts in my head is like, look, we came up with the record player, the radio. We came up with the automobile, flight, put a man on the moon, invented computers. We have computers in our pockets now that are coupled with phones. We have nanotechnology. We can do so many things, sonar technologies. It's just amazing. And you really, really, 2018, you still got to stick a finger in my butt. I've got a protest here. There has got to be some kind of gadget. There's the humor for the night.
You manifested inadvertently a giant-handed Russian woman.
Exactly. Be careful what you look at.
Because you were afraid of it.
That's what the Buddha says, that one finds his destiny and path on the path he avoids takes to avoid it. I'm sorry, I'm just halfway asleep. Sounds like I'm putting you guys to sleep tonight.
No, not at all.
You're
but
not.
We're out of time anyway.
Oh, we are. Always goes by so fast.
Yeah. Now, is there go ahead, Sherry.
It's going by pretty fast, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah. Do you have any listeners want to contact you, is there a method to do that? Or?
Oh, just Eric Mitchell, Facebook is usually what I do. I don't have a website or anything to market or anything like that. I enjoy doing the show.
Awesome. Well, Eric, thanks a lot for coming on the show again. It's been enlightening. It truly has. You're not boring me, because these are all the things that run through my nervous mind every day. So it's nice to hear it from somebody else.
I personally enjoy Eric every time he comes in. It's so refreshing to have somebody that's very spiritual but very enlightened, and he can share from a different point of view. And conspiracy or not, it's amazing to be able to open up your eyes and ears and just, you know, try and see if you can, you know, if there's different possibilities, you know. It's, it's something to be aware of anyway.
I believe
Absolutely.
We all are a possibility. Everybody is a possibility waiting to happen. And the major thing that is in our way is not an external source at all. It's an internal saying that says, I can't, or any negative response like that whatsoever. Everybody's capable of doing so much more than what they are, but they're worshiping limitations on a daily basis, and they're unaware because they're not taking control of those conscious actions. If that makes
worshiping
sense.
Limitations. I like that, worshiping limitations. But well, Eric, thanks so much for coming on, and you know, we'll have to get you back on in the future soon so we can talk about more stuff.
Absolutely, Jason. Anytime you want to get a hold of me on Messenger or anything, just let me know.
Right on.
Thank you, Jason. Oh, thank you, Eric, for your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks
Sorry
for having me
that.
On, guys.
That was a slip. Oh, my gosh.
All righty. Thank you, Eric.
All right. Take care, guys.
Take care. We appreciate you.
All right.
Wow.
What do we got?
So much information, and it's just really refreshing. So next week we're going to have Dylan. He's going to talk about vibrations, and Dylan's. How do you pronounce his name? Sarvik? I don't know. I have no idea. But we're going to have Dylan on our show and just talk about what's going on and more about the metaphysical and spiritual and the paranormal. So. Yeah, I'm excited about that. And then 2 weeks from that, we're going to have Barry Gunn. Barry called in earlier, and wealth of information, and he's with MUFON, and we're excited to have him back also, too.
Absolutely. I need to get with him and so that I can be a guest on his show.
Yes, definitely.
I haven't done
that.
That'd
be good.
Yeah, I need to do that.
So anyway, yes, I want to thank each and every one of you for listening and following us on Facebook. I noticed that our numbers have gone up, and as we continue to grow, the Paranormal Horizons Blog Talk Radio, we're pretty much, I think we're still on the top, aren't we, in the search?
Yeah, I mean, if you type in paranormal in the search bar, we're the first thing that pops up.
Yay! So that means we're pretty out there. That's great, and we put a lot of effort between you and I, and, you know, it's been working out really well, and I just can't thank you enough, and it wouldn't have been successful without your other contribution, Jason.
Yeah, it's a great team effort. I mean, you're marketing and everything, and it's really coming together well, and the show's been on, I want to say, 5 years, I think.
Oh, wow. That
surprised me.
That's
when
amazing.
I looked. Yeah, I think it's been 5 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Or hopefully
we'll
have...
celebrating my third year on Live On Air. Hey, you know, it's
yeah.
been wonderful. I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's just been very, very enlightening and learning and, you know, in the back end. And it's been a very good, and we continue for another 10 years, I hope. So we expand, and the shows that I do, Paranormal Horizons, will be out there even further. And it's just great. I'm just really excited about that. So anyway, Jason, we're going to I think we're going to close out. But, yeah, thank you, everybody. Like I said, it's my third year anniversary on the show, and you know, we've had a couple times we can't get on either with weather or very seldom something happens. But, you know, we want to thank not only our listeners, but want to thank you, our guests, and also our followers on Facebook. Can't thank you enough.
Absolutely. I think we're somewhere around 220 episodes-ish. It's
wow,
pretty
that's
impressive.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So that's, with that, I guess we'll bid everybody adieu, and we'll see everybody next Sunday, PM West Coast time, for another episode of Paranormal Horizons, and hope everybody has a safe and enlightening week. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Take care, everybody. Peace.